All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Lamed Daled Amud Bet. Amar Rav Chananel, Amar Rav, Hechlif Kvar Shviyoteha Psulot. So this is going back to what we left off with yesterday, which is that there is a certain order to how the parshiyot are placed in the Tefillin Shel Rosh. We saw the different opinions with regards to where the placement is, but we'll follow it now with Rashi's shot. When you're looking from outside towards the person wearing the Tefillin, from right to left, when you're facing the person wearing the Tefillin, you're going to have Kadesh, Vayakav Yecha, Shema, Vayayim Shema. That'll be the order according to Rashi. It says here, if you change the order, Psulot. Amar Abaye, so Abaye limits that and says, Lo Amran, El Gviata, the Briata, Briata, the Gviata. That's only if you switch a Parshia that's on the outside to something on the inside, or that which is on the inside to the outside. So right now, according to the way Rashi learns it, you have Kadesh on the right side, and Vayayim Shema on the left side. And then in the middle, you have the Vayakiviyacha and Shema. So it's saying that you can't switch, for instance, Kadesh and Vayakiviyacha, or Shema Vayayim Shemoa. About Gviyata the Gviyato, Briyata the Briyata, Leit Lamba. You switch the two inner ones, or the two outer ones, there's no problem. You would be allowed to switch the Kadesh and Vayayim Shemoa, because they're both on the outside. Or in the internal side, you can switch the Vayakiviyacha with the Shema. That's what Rabbi says. Amrle Rova Maishna. Gviata the Briata, Ubriata the Gviata, Tolo. The Rebbe says, what's the difference? Why do you say over there when you switch the outside to the inside or the inside to the outside, it's problematic? Dafta by the Mechse Avira, Loka Kazio. Because the one that's supposed to be exposed to the outside is not seeing the outside. Bahad Loka by the Mechse Avira, Kakazio. And the one that's supposed to be internal now is seeing the external side of the tefillin. Briata the Briata, Gviata the Gviata, Nami. Hafta by the Mechse Avira, Diomin. The one that's supposed to see the right side of the tefillin, Kachazi Avira the small, is now seeing the left side of the tefillin. Oh, the small, Kachazi Avira the Yomin, the one that was supposed to be on the small, seeing the right side. If placement is important, it shouldn't matter whether you're speaking about the outer edges and the inner sides, or whether you're speaking about anyone. It just doesn't matter. If it's got to be in order, it's got to be in order, no matter what it is. And therefore, there should be no such distinction. Ella Loshna. There is no difference. This is the way that we paskin, that the order of the Seder Parshiot is me'akev, it makes the tefillin psula if you have them out of order. And obviously that makes it that the tefillin of Rashi for the Rabbeinu Tam are psulot, and the tefillin of the Rabbeinu Tam for Rashi are psulot, because you have a different order of the parshiot. And as I mentioned yesterday, that has a nafkamina l'alocha with regards to switching between the tefillin. Mr. Brua brings that it's problematic to switch maybe tefillin shel Rashi, the Rabbeinu Tam, and maybe Rabbeinu Tam the Rashi, because it could be switching from Kodesh to Chol, or from Chol to Kodesh. You don't know which direction you're going in, and therefore it would be Moridin B'Kedusha, which we wouldn't allow, because you're now taking something that's Kadosh and making it something that's Chol. Although there were Achronim, as we noted yesterday, who say that if you go to Rashi, it's okay, since the robe of the post-scheme and the robe of the world wear Rashi, so we would consider that be an upgrade. So Rabbeinu Tam to Rashi is okay, but vice versa is not okay. But in general, we don't switch back and forth for this reason, because of the risk that you're going from something that is the proper way to do it to some way that is the improper way to do it. Amarav Chananel, Amarav, Titura the Tefillin, Alakha the Moshe Misinai. The Titura of the Tefillin is Alakha the Moshe Misinai. We're going to see now that many of the dinim of Tefillin, it's Alakha the Moshe Misinai, for partly obvious reasons, which is that the Torah doesn't give you any information, except Ukshartam Leol Tayadecha Ve'ilu Totafot. How do you know what it looks like? How do you know what it should be? That's the first problem. So therefore, many of the things that we know that are true of the tefillin are halacha l'moshe misinai for that reason, because there's no derivation from the psukim, as opposed to things like tzitzit, where we have certain limudim, like we have the word gedil, we have the word tzitzit. So there, the Gemara tries to work on the definitions of the words and come up with something. There still, there's machloket because of that, exactly how to tie them to knot them, and so on and so forth. By the tefillin, we don't really have anything to work with except the words themselves, the totafot, and then the oat, which isn't going to give you very much information. So most of the dinim are love of the Moshe Misinai. The first of which we're discussing now is the titura. Rashi says that the titura is the Beit Moshavo shel tefillin. It's the base of the tefillin. V'nirakein dap shel gesher. And it looks like a plank of a bridge. It looks like something that is a platform of some sort. So from Rashi's description over here, it sounds like, let's speak about the tefillin shel Rosh, you make the, what he calls the etzbaot, which are the fingers that come up, which are the batim on top. Those are the four different batim that you have on top. And that is on a frame of leather. The leather then extends out in the four directions. There's a flat piece of the leather. After you pushed up the batim in the leather, there are pieces of leather that stick out on the four sides. On three of the sides, you crop the leather, and on the fourth side, you leave it. That fourth side, you then fold under to create almost like a hinged flap on the bottom of the tefillin. That's what Rashi calls the titura. Titura is that base upon which the tefillin sit on. Again, for Rashi, it's a hinged piece of leather that comes underneath. If you've ever seen tefillin before they were closed, one side is hinged, and then it's open. They put the parshiot in, then they close it, and they seal it up, stitch it up and seal it so that it's locked down, and then they paint it so that it doesn't look. Sometimes you can actually see the line. When the painting cracks a little bit, you can see the line of where that fold is, where the bottom part is attached to the top part. So that's what Rashi calls a titura. According to Rashi, it's all or echad. It's one or. Now, we saw that yesterday in the Braita that there is a requirement of or echad. But it seems from the Braita yesterday that the or echad relates to the arba batim. Four batim that are on the top, those four batim have to be an or echad. Not that the entire thing has to be an or echad. Rashi here says that the whole thing is or echad. You see in the Baal Tosafot that that's not the case. They say, hua or, anichbalamata, shimechaseb pi abatim. That it all comes from one piece of leather. Because of the way that he says it's hinged, you fold it under. He says, and that's not our minhag. That's not the way that we do it. We actually make it out of, from what the Baal Tosafot seem to indicate over here, they make it out of two pieces of leather. So if you look down in Ot Chof of the Shita Mekubetzet, he says, so now we have another explanation that titura ze or acher kaful ve'enu mi or batim. It's a separate piece of leather that's not part of the batim. Elo or acher hu v'chetzio ha'elyon nakuv. The upper half gets a hole in it. V'hotzi abatim derech oto hanekev to push the batim through it. V'chetzio hasheni hu lamato, and the second half is below. V'chufeb pia batim, and that covers up the opening of the batim milamata. Tikach nikrat titura, vishu kein dafshel gesher lamato. So it's called a titura, like Rashi says, because it looks like a plank on a bridge. Mea batim, v'chein nagu olam. That's the way that the world works. So he is suggesting, as opposed to Rashi, who says the entire thing is one piece of leather, and the titura is the flap at the bottom that covers in, the Baal Tosafot say that there are two pieces to the tefillin. There's this hinged piece, and then the batim are a separate piece. There's a hole on the top of the top part of the hinged piece, and you push the batim through that. So you see that in the Shita Mekubetzet over here that he brings explanation of the Ri, which clearly is similar to what the Baal Tosafot are saying, that first of all, it's made out of two pieces of leather. That's an important part of what the Baal Tosafot say. And secondly, the batim are independent of the titura. They're pushed up through the base of the titura, but they themselves are not attached to the titura. All right, so then, Amar Abaye, Mavarta de Tfilin, Alacha Lamoshe Misinai. The Mavarta is also Alacha Lamoshe Misinai. Again, you're seeing that some of the other basics of the Tfilin are Alacha Lamoshe Misinai. Rashi says the Mavarta is the bridge. Now he says that the Mavarta is this piece here, the extension here on the Tfilin. It's called the Mavarta because we put the straps, the Ritzuot of the Tfilin, through this piece, and you can move them back and forth. So that's a mavarta, mavarta. You're able to move things back and forth inside of it. That's called the mavarta according to Rashi. So that's the component parts here. You have the mavarta, which is the extension out that holds the ritzuot. That's the mavarta. That's the Alacha Lamoshe Misinai. And then the base here is the titura, which is also Alacha Lamoshe Misinai. That's Rashi's view over here. But if you look in the Baal Tosafot, it says in mavarta, ba'aruch erech mavar perish, mavarta hu titura. V'hen gisharim nikraim mavarta. So the Oroch agrees with Rashi that the Marvarta is the place where you put the Ritzua, but he says the meaning of the word Marvarta is a gesher. Just the part where the Ritzua goes through is called the Marvarta, and the part where the Tefillin are is the Titura. So he doesn't disagree with Rashi's interpretation, he just disagrees with his explanation of the word. Rashi says Marvarta because the strap runs back and forth through it, whereas he thinks it's Mavarta because it's like a flat piece, like a gesher. Although Tosfot does bring another interpretation of Mavarta, but it's V'yesh Mavarta, something that crosses over. V'yesh Mifarshim Mavarta Ritzuak Tana Shemavirim Lamala Al Beit Filin Shel Yad. bite of the tonchiya, there's a string that pulls over it. The Rosh, commenting on this view of the Tosafot, says that that string is not called the Mavarta. That string is just there to tighten or hold stronger the tefillin shoyad. Again, remember when we're discussing everything today, their tefillin were mostly dakot, and therefore they were much weaker than our tefillin gasot, and therefore they had to do things to strengthen the integrity of the tefillin, and this is what the Rosh claims that string was. Although the Rif does bring another interpretation where it's speaking about strings, but he says it's actually the strings that go through the batim of the tefillin shel Rosh, which we discussed in yesterday's daf, possibly the explanation of the Braita from yesterday, that there were strings that were pulled in between the batim in order to separate out the batim. And that's what he calls the ma'avarta, because they're crossing over the gap between the batim.
Vamar Abaye, shin shel tefillin halakha l'Moshe Mitzinai. That the shin of the tefillin is also halakha l'Moshe Mitzinai. So Rashi says over here, shin shel tefillin, the bayit chitzona, that they have in the tefillin, as we know, on the right and left side of the tefillin, you have shins that are imprinted on there by squeezing the leather down and creating an imprint of a shin that sticks out. So that's what we're describing here. That shin is halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai. Seemingly, for Rashi, that is not just the shin that's halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai, but it's also the knot of the dalet, and the yud that's on the tefillin shel yad, because he says it's all part of the name Shakai, and that seemingly is halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai. We'll see later on in today's daf the machloket about that issue. So Rashi over here just says that it's the shin on the side of the tefillin, shin shel tefillin halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai, of two tosfot over here, shorosh ayri, bad notna, im ein dino liot poselet, the nim say ein bayit roet avir, because you need halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai, because if there was something on top that doesn't belong to the bayit, then you fail. The bayit has to be able to see the air around it. I mean, anything covers the bayit, it's problematic. So the shin would have been problematic had it not been for the fact that it was halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai. And then, the next one he quotes, the source for this idea of the two shins, says, Katav is Shimush Rabba. Shimush Rabba has a lot of influence, especially in the Kabbalistic entry of items into the halacha. So the Shimush Rabba says, the tefillin surat the shin diamino. The one on the right side is Gimel Reshe, three heads. The Smola, Dalet Reshe. And on the left side, it should be four-headed shin. The Iipoch, Leitlanpa. If you flip them around, if you make a mistake putting the other way, there's no problem. Now, the first thing that he's saying is, first of all, that there are two different shins, one with four heads and one with three heads. The second thing is, he's saying that they go on the right and the left. The old question then, obviously, is the right of what and the left of what? You look in the Shita Mekubetzet, Od Chafhei, what the Shita Mekubetzet was clarifying here, is Nago Alam, the Shin Da'arba Reshe Tzad Kadesh, that it's on the Kadesh Liko B'chor side, which means the right side when you're facing the tefillin, and then the left side, by the Shema side, or the Vayayim Shema side, you put the three-headed shin, which is on the left side when you're facing the tefillin. And the Shita Mekubetzet, Od Chafhei, brings, why is it that you have to have a shin with four heads on it? That's because in the Luchot, where it was carved out the shin, there was empty space, and then the shin was boleit. And so this represents the avir, the empty space in the luchot, that forms a shin. So if you look in between the heads of the shin, the four heads of the shin, you will see three heads of a shin. It's forming the air space that, if you remove, would leave a shin that is imprinted there. And then Gemara says, "Tzarech she'yagia charitz the makom ha'tefer." And the charitz has to reach the point where the tefer, where the stitching is. So now, Rashi says that it means shem ben bayit the bayit. On the shel rosh, where you have the split of the batim, the split in the batim has to reach all the way down to the base over here, where the stitching is. They got to go all the way down. It can't just be part of the way down. It must go down all the way to the bottom. That's the way that Rashi learns it, that the charitz has to get to the makom ha'tefer. Or some say that this is a reference to the shin that we just discussed, that the base of the shin must reach makom ha'tefer. Rav Dimi min Haradar amar, came into minkar lo tzarich. As long as it's visibly separate, the batim, you don't need it to reach all the way down to the base. Amar Abaye, ha kilfa, kilfa means clap, the tefillin tzarich lemibdegei. You need to check the clap before you write on it. The dilma ipe riuta, because it might possibly have holes in it, which would be problematic. Ubeina k'tiva tama veleka, because if it has a hole in it and you need a k'tiva tama, you're going to have a break in the letter. You're going to have places where the letter is not sitting on the klaf because the klaf has a hole in it. Or the other possibility is that the letter is not mukaf gvil. If you have a hole right next to the letter, then it prevents the gvil from touching the letter, because you have an empty space right next to the letter. So what Abai says is you gotta take the cloth, hold it up to the light, and make sure that there are no holes in the cloth. Rav Dimi midarada amar lo tzarich. Rav Dimi again says, you don't need to do it, like you said before, by the batim. As long as they're visibly separate, you don't have to have it go down all the way. Here he says you don't need to check the cloth. Kumasu badikla. While you're writing, you will find out. If there's a hole in it, you'll know, because you'll feel it catch when you're writing with the kumus on the cloth. So it'll become obvious that there is a hole over there. And tells what explains kumusu badikla, that behena halacha, that's the halacha that you can use a kumus, because kol nekev says, yo overa la veinu nekev. Because if the kumus crosses over the nekev, the ink fills the hole, and therefore it's not longer considered to be a hole, and it's not problematic. It still could be that there's problems with holes that are next to the letters, because then they have a problem of mukaf kavil, but at least if the kumus goes smoothly over the holes, it takes care of it. So that's why you wouldn't have to check for holes, because when you write, the ink itself will fill the holes, and therefore it's not a problem. As opposed to what we were suggesting before, that the kumus will get caught in the holes, and you know that there's a hole there, you know that there's a problem there. Alright, I'm Rav Yitzchak. Ritzuot, shechorot, halacha l'moshe misinai. The fact that the ritzuot have to be black is also halacha l'moshe misinai. So, meitve, tefillin, in koshin otan, ela b'minan. You only can use leather, you can only use what you can use for the tefillin to tie the tefillin. The ritzuot have to be made out of the same material as the batim. Ben yirukot, they can be green. Ben shechorot, they can be black. Ben levanot, they can be white. There's no color definition for the ritzuot. Adumot lo yaseh, you shouldn't make them red, mipnei gnai v'davar acher, because that's considered to be something that is undignified, and davar acher, something else beyond that. If you look in Rashi as to what that is, davar acher, shema yomru ishto nida, bal, it is be'ubadam, seems pretty far-fetched. He had relations with his wife when she was in nida, and somehow the dam got onto the ritzuot. That's the chashash of davar acher, when they want to speak about something that's sanua, or something that they don't want to speak about, because I'll call it davar acher. And the gnai aspect, as Rashi says over here, is shema yomru gardanu umidam chatatav nitzbeu beidim haritzuot. Because maybe they will say that this individual has some sort of skin disease or some problem, and then because of his skin or his scaling on his body, the blood is getting onto the tefillin. And that would indicate that there's something sickly about this individual, and that's why it's unbecoming. Those are the two things that Rashi says is wrong with using red. Others say that the problem of the gnai, maybe the davar acher, is that red is a woman's color. And therefore, if you had red on the tefillin, it would be some sort of indication of wearing like a beged isha. So that would be the problem with using red on the tefillin as opposed to the other colors. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda, Maseh b'Talmido Shel Rabbi Akiva, she'koshert tefilav b'lishonot shel techelet. That he first straps the tefillin, he did not have leather, but rather he used strips of techelet. Techelet would be wool, so it'd be like strips of blue wool, or strings of blue wool. Lo amar lo davar. And Rabbi Akiva never chastised him. If shar oto tzadik ra'a talmido v'lo michabo, possible that he saw his talmid doing this and he didn't stop him. That means that, in essence, he's condoning that behavior, and that must mean that that's okay for a ritzua. Amar lo hein, lo ra'oto. He never saw him. He had a lot of talmidim. He didn't see this talmid, and therefore he never chastised him. Doesn't mean what he's doing is right. Bim ra'oto, lo yaminicho. And had he seen him, he would have stopped him. He wouldn't have let him do it. Maseh behurkunus, benosh Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkunus. So Hurkunus named after his grandfather, son of Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkunus. Shekoshet tefillah b'lishonot shel argaman. He used to use strips of purple pieces of wool. Tchelet and argaman really derive from the same source. It's just a question of the oxidation process that happens as to whether they will be blue or purple. And that has to do with their exposure to the sun. So the same tchelet and argaman, they're created the same way. It's just a question of how far the process goes. Below Amar lo davar, and again, his father didn't say anything to him. If Shalotot Tzadik Rabbeinu Lo Michabo, he saw his son doing this and he didn't stop him. Again, that must mean that that's okay. So Amar lo, hey, lo ra'auto, he didn't see him. Bim ra'auto, lo yaminicho, had he seen him, he would have stopped him. So the Gemara brings evidence of Talmidim, or children of big Tzadikim, who are not complying with this Braita, that the fact that the Mitzvot have to be made out of the same material as the Batim. And the Gemara in both cases says, had they seen, they would have stopped. But they were not aware of the fact that these individuals were doing that. Tani miat, nevertheless, kadai miat, ben yurkot, ben shkorot, ben levanot. There's no color preference in terms of the ritual. You can have any color aside from red. And so how did you say before, it's Allah HaLamosh Misinai, that the ritual would be black. So when it says, lokash, kan bi mifnim, kan bi bachutz. Has to do with which side of the straps. On the outer side of the straps, that which faces out has to be black. The inner part of the strap can be any color that you want. Doesn't matter. Well, if it's on the insides of the straps, then why do we care even if it's red? Because it's not going to be the visible part of the straps. Why is there a gnai or a davar acher? What's the chashash if it's the inside of the straps? That's because the straps, as you well know, from where it's filling, they flip over sometimes, and the inside is exposed. What's interesting today, there's a new innovation today with regards to the straps. One of the problems, or the biggest problems with the ritual, is this halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim. Halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim that the straps must be black. Over time, the straps wear down, and you get cracking in the paint that is on the straps, especially today, where many of the chemicals they used in the past that allowed the paint to bind to the straps are illegal to use in most developed countries, and therefore it's hard to get the paint to stick as well to the straps. So what happens over time from wear and tear is that the black cracks, or you start to get places where the straps are worn down and they're no longer black. That's problematic because there's a law for the Moshe Mitzrayim that the straps have to be black. So today they have this new innovation whereby they make the straps black from all the way through. Meaning that the strap is not only black on the outside with the paint, but they also soak it through to the full strap, and therefore it's black on both sides. And therefore what happens is that even if the paint breaks down, something happens, you still have the straps be black because of the fact that the strap itself is inherently black because it's been soaked or dyed before they painted it on the outside. And that avoids this problem of the Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Some of the sofrim are very into this and want to sell it to the bar mitzvah boys. There are a number of issues with this, which when I've spoken to sofrim about what they think of it, some things to keep in mind. One is the fact that he says it's not new technology. To make the straps completely black is not something that is a sudden innovation. There was nothing technologically that they couldn't do 300 or 400 years ago. They could have done this. The fact that they didn't do this 300 or 400 years ago says that they were not necessarily comfortable with doing that, or they didn't think it was the right way to go. So some sofrim are just reticent because of the fact that there is no history of doing this, even though they had the capacity to do this. The lack of a mesorah, the fact that nobody innovated this until now, shows you that that may not have been the right way to do it. Maybe there's something to having one side be white and one side be black. The contrast itself might be important. That's one thing to keep in mind. The second thing to keep in mind is the fact that once you do that, if the straps have the black paint on the inside or the dye on the inside, that can leach onto the body, and therefore chemicals that are in there now are going to be on your arm or on your head, and if you perspire a little bit, they can enter your body, and it can affect you. So there are something to keep in mind. That's just a separate health issue. But they do recommend it for people who wear heavily on their straps. There's some people either who schwitz a lot or who put a lot of wear and tear on their straps. So for those types of people, it's worth it because they probably won't come back often enough to get their straps painted. But for a normal person, your straps should stay painted for a very long period of time. It's really not so much to worry about in terms of them not being black. And when they aren't, you can go get them painted quickly. But that's just in terms of a little change in the technology or what people do with regards to tefillin. Tana, tefillin mirubot, halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. The fact that tefillin are square is also halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. The Amar Rapapa, Rapapa adds, bitfaran ubalach sonan. That's with their stitch and with their diagonal. So here, now again, the question of what has to be square is not clear. Rashi over here says, the Rav Papa is coming to add that it is a right triangle where the two sides are of equal length. And therefore, you have a hypotenuse that is subject to the din that the Chachamim bring that called Amta Biribua. We have an Amah by an Amah. The hypotenuse is an Amah and Trei Chomshe. So Rashi sees this as being a code word for the fact that it is square. Versus what you could have understood from the Braita that Merubat, the Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim, could have meant a rectangle. It just means something with right angles. So Rashi says that Rav Papa comes to clarify that it's not just right angles, but it's right angles that form a square rather than a rectangle. Although you could have easily seen someone explained that the alaksonan just means it has to be a right angle, and that maybe a rectangle would be fine over here, as long as it's not circular and it's squared out, which creates a hypotenuse. Now, you have over here on your tefillin, first of all, the stitching that comes around. That's tefaran. That's the stitch. So the stitch needs to be square, and that forms this square over here. The stitching will be absolutely square. You can see your tefillin themselves, the base of the tefillin, or what we called the titura before, is not square. It is rectangle. The Rosh argues that's why over here, you see these cutouts that you have over here? The cutouts by the straps or the ritzuot. Why do we have those cutouts? It's not necessary to have the cutouts. Maybe it helps a little bit for the straps to fold down. But what the Rosh says is we make these indentations because if I take away these indentations, see now you have a square base. So that's what the Rosh says. That's what it means over here. The actual tefillin base is square when you knock off the ma'abarta. And that's why we actually carve into the sides over here to make it as if the ma'abarta is a separate section so that if you take it out from where these inserts are, you actually get a square base to the tefillin. So that's what most believe, that the square here is the tefirah, this actual tefirah. And what the Rosh added is that the base over here is square. So now if you look in Tosafot, Tosafot says, Ritzuot shchorot, yesho sim batim shel tefillin miklaf lavan. Some people will make their batim out of white cloth. Lo benin shchorot ela ritzuot. The Gemara only said, Allah kamosh misinai with black is with the ritzuot, not the batim. Number two, tefillin mirubot. Yesheim mirabim ela makom moshavam. That's what it said to you, that there are many that believe that the squaring only has to be at the base, which is where the tefirah or the base is. When all four of them are pressed together, maybe that also has to be a square, which is what Rashi believes. And so too, the bayit of the yad, that one piece has to be a square. It says, it sounds a little bit like this, that that's not the case. Which is the base, this stitching, and then the hypotenuse of the stitching needs to be square. But the batim themselves do not need to be square. So the Balei HaTosafot just explained that Rav Papa is just coming to qualify that statement of the Lokomash Misenai about Ribua. What is that speaking about? That's speaking about Tefaran and Aloksonan. But it's not speaking about the batim at all. Whereas Rashi says that it also includes the batim, and you can see that in Obet of the Shita Mekubet, at Perish HaKuntris HaBatim Mirubaim. That the batim themselves are Miruba. Olech LeTamosh Perush. That the batim and the titura are from one piece of parchment. And that's what the Shita Mekubetz says in Ot Chavav. The minhag is to make everything miruba. Even the part that's above the batim. This whole area is all square. This is a square over here. The batim themselves form a square. But Tosfot entertains the possibility that you could have circular tefillin on top. Now, they found in the Cairo Geniza tefillin that were round. Meaning that the batim were round over here, even though the base was square. And that would square away with Tosafot, who says that you have possibility of making the batim not square, just have to sit at a tefirah, at the base has to sit on a square, but their tefillin were made out of a cylinder rather than a box or cube that we have. So we're makbid on all of this. We make batim cubic, they're all squared out, and the base is square. So now, lemi masailei, let us say that we have a brayta that supports Rav Papa's contention over here. Oseh tefilato agula, sakana vein ba mitzvah. Someone who makes his tefillin circular, that's dangerous. Not only do you not get the mitzvah, but you're also endangering yourself. Rav Papa matnitin davida kim amguza. That the brayta that we're quoting over there is when you make it like a nut, which is that it's pointed or sharp. So therefore, when you hit your head, if you bump your head into the lintel of the door or into a wall, then it's going to press back into your skull. So if you have something that's shaped like a nut and it's pointed in some way, then it's going to be impacted into your skull. And that's the danger over there. So that, from the Mishnah, the only problem would be something that is more sharply rounded. But something that's completely rounded, like a cylinder, wouldn't it be a problem because that's not going to cause the type of damage of sakana. So therefore, Rav Papa comes along and adds on that not only is it, according to Rashi at least, not only can you not wear something that's dangerous where it's circular and pointed, but you can't even wear something that's like a cylinder, according to Rashi. According to others, it's just the base has to be square. So as long as your base is square, it doesn't matter what's on top of the base because then the batim can be circular in nature or cylindrical in nature. And that's the way the tefillin that they found, again, was that they had a cylinder sitting on top of the square base. Amar Rav Huna, tefillin kol zman shepnei tavla kayemet kusherot. As long as the face is still there, they are kusherot. So over here again, the mefarshim, it's not clear what the Gemara is speaking about in terms of pnei tavla. The Torah actually notes that it is the tavla, which is like a tabletop or the base of the tefillin, and he thinks it's referencing to the titura and the ma'abarta, and not to the batim themselves. Rashi says ze or shel batim. Rashi just says it's the batim themselves. As long as they still have any thickness to them, they are fine. When you start out, they are much thicker. If they wore down over time, it would be fine, as long as there's a surface that's there. That's what Rashi says, and it's based on the next part of the Gemara, which is speaking about the batim. So he says that's a reference to the batim over here. And that then leads into the next halacha, which is Abchista Amar, Nifsiku Shtayim Ksherot, Shalosh Psulot. If two of them are ripped, broken, something wrong with them, it's okay. If three of them have that, then it's Pasul. Amar Rova Hada Amar Shtayim Ksherot. When we say that two are Ksherot, Lo Amran El Zesh Lo Geged Zeh. That as long as they are not parallel to each other. Aval Zeh Keneged Zeh Psulot. If they're right up against each other, then they are Psulot. Zeh Keneged Zeh Nami Lo Amran El Bechadato. And those that are right next to each other, we only say it's problematic when they're new. But if they are atikta, if they are much older, or they're worn tefillin, then we don't worry about it. So here, what we're saying is, you have four batim. Each of the batim is its own pocket. The way that it's created, by putting pressure in the skin, that there are like four fingers, as Rashi says, that come out or protrude up. Again, before the days of the technology that we have today, the tefillin many times looked like this. They were four separate compartments, and they did not get them all together. It was very hard to get them together. When in the 70s and 80s, most people had tefillin or got tefillin in that period of time, they glued them together, which is not pashut. That is not accepted by many of the poskim to be okay. People before that period of time had them split, and they usually wore tefillin that were fanned. And I mentioned this before, Reb Chaim Mibrisk, if you look at pictures of him, his tefillin looked like this. They were actually four batim sticking out like that. So then they started to glue them. Later on, in the more modern era, the technology's gotten good enough where they can press them. They can put enough pressure on them that these batim are no longer glued together, but they stay together just from the pressure that was placed on them. Now, each one of those four batim is an independent pocket. Since they are adjacent to each other, the other pocket covers for it. That's what it's saying here. As long as they are not facing each other, so that's shalom keneged zeh. So if it's bayit number one that has a problem and bayit number three that has a problem, then bayit number two sits in between and protects them. Since between each bayit, you have actually two pieces of leather. You have the leather from the right bayit and the leather from the left bayit. So if one of them rips, the other one will cover it and it will not be a problem. That's the way Rashi reads it. That's one day on Rashi. And that's the way most post-game read it, which is that the bayit can cover for the other bayit. And therefore, if you get a hole, and that's what Rava qualified over here, if they're adjacent to each other, and each one of them is ripped, then you have a problem, because they're facing each other, and they're not covering for each other. But if they're not adjacent to each other, then the one in between will cover that which is ripped. The Rashi brings a second interpretation, which is Shalok Neged Zeh, Shalok Neged Zeh means the hole itself. That even if they are adjacent to each other, as long as the rips or the tears are not facing each other, then it's still covered. So since they're not, if they were facing each other exactly, then you have a hole all the way through. But if they're not facing each other, then even though they're on the same face of the batim, nevertheless they're covering for each other. So that's a big kula. The Rashi brings in that second interpretation. That's the other way that Rashi explains it. Then we have a qualification that it's only true in new tefillin. It's not true in the older tefillin. This is hard to understand, because if it's a problem to have a hole, why should it matter if it's new tefillin or old tefillin? So, most explain that with new tefillin, the fear is if it ripped this early, that there's a quality problem. If there's a quality problem, that rip's not going to just be here, it's going to start to tear further, and you're going to have the parshiot move out of the batim or slip out of the batim. By an older tefillin, since the skins have already hardened, even if they tear or rip a little bit, they're not going to continue to rip or expand, because they have a certain amount of elasticity has been taken away, to the point where even if you tear them, they're stiff and they're not going to move anymore. So that's probably the difference between them. Or, again, it could be a quality issue independent of what I'm saying. It doesn't mean they're going to rip more, but if it rips so early, that shows that the workmanship is problematic, and then you can anticipate more problems. Not that this tear will expand, but there's going to be problems all the way along, and maybe there's an issue. So I'm going to buy the Rabbi Yosef. What's called new? And what's called old? If you pull on the leather, you stretch the leather, and it goes back, it recovers from that pull, atikta, that's older leather. Meaning that it's already hardened enough that whatever the shape of it is cannot be undone at this point. And if you pull on it, it just returns to the former shape. That's called atikta. Bidach, and anything else, is called chadata. Although you can see in the Shita Mikubetz at Odalit that he brings a girsa that's just the opposite, which happens to be the girsa of the Rif, that the new ones will go back to place, whereas the old ones will stretch and not go back to their place. And then the logic would just be the opposite, which is that the new ones have the ability to hold on even after they get ripped, whereas the older ones, since they're already worn down, once they're ripped, they will continue to rip. V'inami, k'eicha d'chi matli bei b'matna atya batrei. So the way Rashi says over here, when the person holds the ritzua that's holding it, the tefillin follow it and do not rip off. Then that's chadabta. V'idach, and the other one would be atikta, would be older ones. It's not so clear here what it means. When you pull it by the ritzuot, mean that you're pulling on the ritzuot and then something's holding the bayit, and that's what's causing, it has to be some sort of counter pressure. Just because you pick something up by the ritzuot doesn't mean it's going to tear right away. So if the tefillin come after it, and don't break away, those are charata. It seems to me that there's some sort of pressure on holding the batim, and you're pulling on the ritzuot. And the question is, what happens? If you pull on them, and they do not break away, that's new. If they break away, meaning that the straps break and the tefillin stay whole, then that's considered to be atikta. And that shows the strength of the tefillin, that the straps break away and the tefillin stays with it, versus the other case where the tefillin comes along, so that shows that the tefillin aren't as strong. I think that's maybe what Rashi is saying. Then he brings the third lashon, lishna achrina, acha batresh mit pasheta or aviyacharata. If you pull on the straps and the leather over here stretches, that's an indication of new leather. If you pull on the straps and nothing happens to the leather over here, that's an indication that it's older leather. Because again, it's lost its elasticity, and therefore it will either return to its former state, or you can't get it to move from the current state. Yeah, you're right. With film dakot, it's much more plausible that these types of things happen. First of all, that you get tears. And number two is that you can actually pull on them and they would move or stretch a little bit. Because the way we have today with gassot, they're so thick that they're almost like blocks. And it's very hard to move them. Although I have seen people who sometimes wear tefillin, if they wear it with wet hair, that the tefillin actually warp underneath. And you can actually get, even with gassot, you can get a type of warping in the tefillin. One of his ritzuot tore. Can I tie it back on? Can I knot it back on so that I have a strap? It says that you have to tie them. Should take shira tama. It has to be a full shira. Rashi over here brings two interpretations. Either she takes shira na'a. It has to be a nice tying. And a nice tying means that it's a singular ritzua, not that it has knots on, along the way that are holding it together. So that would be a problem in aesthetics. Or he says, lashon acher, it means there has to be a whole ritzua and not a ritzua that is tied. So either shlema, tam here means shlema, whole, like we saw before with the letters. You can't be missing any letters. That's the shlema. Therefore, tying it or knotting it means that it's not whole. Or it's an aesthetic problem. Ukshartam says there should be one kshira, and that kshira is it. If you have anything else on it, then that doesn't live up to the beauty or aesthetics we would have expected from a ritzua. And so that's why you can't tie it. Amarle Ravacha Bre Rav Yosef, the Ravashi Malda Mitzvere. Can you stitch it? Not knot it, but stitch it, Va'ila Litzvir the Gav. And then you do the stitching internally. So from the external, from the outside, you can't tell that it's stitched together because the stitching is done on the inside. So the visible stitching is on the inside of the strap. From the outside, you can't see the stitching. Is that okay? Amar, he says, Fokhazi Ma'ama Dover. Go out and see what the people do. What's the minhag of the am? So Rashi says over here, came into Enoel Gim, came lotase. People don't do that, so don't do it. That's what Rashi says. Look at the top Tosfot, perish bekotchus lahachmir. That when he said, go out and look what people are doing, he says, that wasn't the minhag am, so don't do it. Rabbeinu Tam befarish lahakel, like other places in Shas, where it says, pokam adover, go see what the people do. when the people do the hakel. That's the usual way that it's used in Shas. That means over here too. Go out and see. People do this. People do it. Then it's okay. So the Rabbeinu Tam uses this, the hakel, and says that it is permissible to do such a thing. Amar Papa, gardume ritzuot kshirot. If you have ritzuot that were severed, and they're not the full length that they were originally, those gardumim, which is something we're going to come up to in tzitzit as well, where you have strings that have torn, the residual of the strings. So here it says, gardume ritzuot kshirot, belav milti, and that is wrong. The fact that we have a braita from the Bnei Rabbi Chia that says, the gardume tchelet means tzitzit, that have the strings that were severed, the gardume ezob, and the ezob that's used for the sprinkling of the parah duma, if you have the residual of them left, that is ksherim. Those are kasher. The fact that it only mentions tchelet and ezob, and does not mention ritzuot, shows you that they believe that the ritzuot, gardume ritzuot, would be problematic if the ritzuot were too short. The difference between their purposes. They are tashmishei mitzvah. Both the tchelet, the tzitzit, and the ezov are considered tashmishei mitzvah, which is that they are something that is used in the performance of a mitzvah. A great, good example is a shofar or a lulav. They are props that are used to accomplish a mitzvah. Meant to blow the shofar. So the shofar is a tashmishei mitzvah. The lulav is used to be yotzei, the mitzvah of lulav, for you to pick up the lulav. The lulav is considered to be a tashmishei mitzvah. The rites of tashmishei mitzvah, basically, they have kedusha while they're being used. After they're finished being used, they no longer have kedusha. Now, it's brought down by the poskim not to be mizalzel. You don't just throw them in the garbage afterwards. You should treat them with a certain amount of kabod because the mitzvah was done with them. But on the other hand, there's no need for gniza because they're not considered to be tashmishei kedusha. On the other hand, when you have something that's the Shmishei Kedusha, it means something that's attached to something with inherent Kedusha. So the tefillin themselves, or the batim of the tefillin, have Kedusha. They have inherent Kedusha. The straps are servicing the tefillin, so they are Tashmishei Kedusha. So again, Tashmishei Kedusha, first of all, have residual Kedusha, even after they are detached. And number two is they will require a Gniza. So that's the difference between Tashmishei Mitzvah and Tashmishei Kedusha. But also the difference here is, Tashmishei mitzvah, if as long as you started out with the whole item, and now you have some residual of that item, that's good enough to perform the mitzvah. On the other hand, when you're talking about Tashmishei kedusha, where you started out with a item, and then it's cut down, that is no longer good to use. But now the Gemara says, from what you're saying here, it's pretty obvious, Michlal de'ilahu shiura. There must be some shiur to the straps. Because how can you speak about gardumim, severed straps, or residual straps, when they don't have any length to them that they must be. If there's no given length, then you can never have residual, because any length would be sufficient. So, kama shiurayu. How long do the straps have to be? It has to be until the etzpat srado in the Gemara and Yoma, according to Rashi and many, is the pointer finger. And they used to snap their fingers using the pointer finger and their thumb in front of the Kohen Gadol to keep them up on the night of Yom HaKippurim. There the Mishnah uses Tzrada as well. So that'd be Etzbat Tzrada. And the way that Rashi explains it is based on the Gemara. Now, Rav Kahani Mechavi Kafuf, he showed it bent over. Rashi Mechavi Pashut, with that extended. So Rashi says Kafuf means Orech HaRitzua Shateo Devar Al Kesher, the Kesher in the back. How much of a Ritzua do you need to extend outside of the Kesher, beyond the Kesher in the back? Kama Sheyecholev Shot Me Etzba Ba'adama. From your middle finger and your etzba. That's all you have to have. Like the V sign for the victory sign. Whatever the top of your two fingers, that distance, that is the amount of ritzua that you have to extend beyond. The other day I was pashut. That's the distance between your pointer finger and your thumb. Because that is pshita. That's extended out. Since between your finger and the thumb you extend much more, that's called pashut. Between here, it's called kafuf, because that's a tighter relationship. So that's what Rashi says. First of all, there are two things that come out of Rashi. The first thing is that it's speaking about tefillin shel rosh. Number two is, he says it's speaking about the space between the middle finger and the pointer finger, or the space between the thumb and the pointer finger. And you can see that in the Tosfot. The chora, the tefillin shel rosh, ayre. Sounds like we're talking about tefillin shel rosh, because the next two memrot in the Gemara are speaking about tefillin shel rosh, or the ritzua of the tefillin shel rosh. So it would make a lot of sense that this statement is also about tefillin shel rosh. that he says, V'shir Ritzuah Shel Yad Ad Etzpa Tzradol. That's talking about the length of the Ritzuah of the Yad, that they have to reach the finger, and he says, Mai Tzradol Emtza'i, the middle finger. That's telling you, when you tie them onto your arm, how far do the straps have to go down your arm? They have to be able to reach all the way down to your middle finger, which is the way that we do our Ritzuah Shel Yad today. We wrap them all the way down and then around the middle finger in the wrapping of the Ritzuot. So you need it to reach until that point. So that's what he brings as an alternative. So that's right. So according to Rashi, it's the pointer finger, which is hard to do. According to the Oruch, it would be the middle finger and the thumb that they snap their fingers with, because he says that Tzrada is the middle finger, not the pointer finger. And then he talks about brings the Yishma Farchim, Aret Betzrada, Shetzarech, Lasod the Ritzuot, Arukot, Mimakom Anachatam, Ad Etzba Tzrada. The Kafuf, and it should go feifet etzbo, umesher etzua atsham. That explanation would be that the ritzua has to be until the finger. Which finger? When the finger is extended or when the finger is bent? How long does it have to be? Utvilin sherosh, sherein ritzot, shetagia rosh echad ad tiburo. And then with the utvilin sherosh, you have to have one strap reach your belly button. Rosh sheni ad aleiv. And the second one reach your heart. Veshema shumidrashish. Maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe there's some sort of reasoning why you would pick the lave and the belly button. Ubishimush rabba, tefillin yesh lifshu ritzue ad limte lechada keneged mila, miyamina, your right one should reach down to your brit mila, lechada keneged alev, and then the left one should reach to your heart. Here you see all these different explanations as to the length of the ritzuot. Seems like, according to Rashi, the Tzrado is speaking about the length of the tefillin shel rosh ritzuot. According to the Zeish Mepharchim, thinking about the shel yad, you could actually mix the two and say, how far did the tefillin shel rosh have to go? The ritzuot, it has to go when you have your hand or your arm next to you. It has to reach the etzba tzrado. It has to reach the finger on there. I didn't see anybody who says that, but to me that could make a lot of sense, that they are speaking about the tefillin shel rosh, but describing how far down do the straps have to go on the tefillin shel rosh. But again, we have the two opinions over here. One that it is about tefillin shel rosh. The other one, it's tefillin shel yad, and then tefillin shel yad have to reach down to the middle finger or the pointer finger, depending on what you think there, and whether it's extended or kafuf would be the argument over here. And then if you do that, the tefillin shel rosh, the Baalei Tosfot bring a misora, that it has to reach your heart and your belly button. They bring from the Shemush Rabba that it's your brit milah and your heart. Again, today our straps are much longer than that, so it's no deficit that they're longer, but our straps extend beyond the heart on most people and beyond the brit milah on most people. As long as it reaches to that point. But again, he says, I don't know what the source for that is. I don't know what the reason behind that is, but there must be some reason. But you can understand that the heart and the milah are significant religious symbols, and therefore the ritzuot reaching to them have some sort of symbolic connection to the tefillin, that they should reach there so that there's a penetration, let's say, of the kedushat tefillin in areas like the lev and like the brit milah. You can understand why we would maybe have something representative like that. This is going to be shocking. As Rashi says in the Baalei Tosfot pointed out, this is speaking about tefillin shel rosh. Rabba katalohu upashit. He would knot them, vishadilo, and then just let the straps fall, and that was it. So he put on his tefillin shel rosh, he knotted them in the back, upashit, and then just let them drop and fall on his back. Vakar Yaakov katalohu umatlitohu. He used to tie them or knot them, and then he would braid them together, the straps, after the knot, he used to braid them together. So that's the tefillin shel rosh. So neither of them wore the straps in front. They both wore the straps in back. One of them just let them fall, Rabba. And according to Rav Acher ben Yaakov, they braided them in the back. Mar braid the Ravana, it could be done. Mar braid the Ravana did it like we do it. So Raj says, what does it mean that way we do it? It means that we pull the straps to the front, and they fall down the front of our body. See here that in the Amoraim didn't wear tefillin like we wear tefillin. They had their straps hanging in the back, and they had them braided in the back. Whereas the practice that we have is what Mar Braid the Ravana had, which was that he pulled the straps forward, according to Rashi. And you can see that in Tosfot also. He says, he straightens them out, and just drops them on his shoulders towards the front, meaning they're coming over the shoulders into the front of the body. So both Rashi and Tosfot say it. Nobody says why, but that probably is connected to also having them by the lev and by the milah, that the representation, that's number one. I think it's more derech kavod than throwing them over your back, more kavod to have them pulled to the front and having them just hang on your back, which is also maybe a part of this. But those who think that the previous gemara was speaking about the length of their tzuah shel yad, then the explanation of this would be Rabba Katalu Poshit Vishadidu. He would tie them and wrap them up and then leave them. Rakab Katalu Matlidu. He used to wrap them around, then wrap them around his finger, and then only afterwards tie them down. So that would be a reference to the krichot that we do on the etzpa would be indicated through this. And therefore, matlidu would be that he tied it three times. And that would be a reference to from the word slat. And that would be a reference to the three krichot that we do on our finger based on what it's being said here by Rav Acher ben Yaakov. Although then it would make it harder to understand what is the abdik didan. Marbarei the Ravana did like what we do. Sounds like Rav Acher ben Yaakov already did what we do. So there must have been either some addition or some other additional item that he did that wasn't done by Rav Yaakov. Rav Yehuda brei the Rav Shmuel bar Shilat mishmei the Rav. Kesher shel tefillin alacha the Moshe misinai. The kesher of the tefillin is alacha the Moshe misinai. Rashi says over here, kesher shel tefillin. She has sima ritzuot al rosho. Bina she dalit kadei shehde shakai nira aleyen. The fact that the dalit is the knot of the kesher shel tefillin, that is alacha the Moshe Sinai. The shin nira bekemet, because you have the shin that's imprinted on the tefillin themselves, by beit achitzonah, she kafela klaf ke'en shin, v'dalet nira bekesher, v'yud nira b'oto shel yad, and the yud is on the shel yad, you have that little knot that you have by the mahabarta of the shel yad, that is the shem shakai. So Rashi sees all three of these as being halacha l'moshe misinai, the shin that's imprinted on the tefillin, the dalet that is the knot of the shel rosh, and the yud that is the din of the shel yad. So Rashi sees all of these as being halacha l'moshe misinai. B'amar Rav Nachman v'Noam the bar, and their beauty has to be to the outside. We don't know what that means. Rashi brings two. Hashem shiyeh nireh b'chutz. Hashem Hashem has to be facing out so someone can read it. Because kishem Hashem nikra lecha is that someone can read it. That means the shin has to be readable from the outside. That's why it has to be on the outside of the tefillin. The dalet has to be made in a way that it's a dalet for the person looking at it. It's not a dalet that's flipped over, but a dalet where you have the head of the dalet from the left and then the leg of the dalet on the right. So someone looking at the knot that you have is a dalet that they can see. The other option here is that you have to flip the shrutuot. If the ritzuot flip over, their black side has to be facing outwards. You can't have them turn over. So not only do you have to have that one side is black and one side it can be any color, but the side that is black, Noyem the bar, has to be facing outwards. That's another interpretation Rashi brings. Rashi brings those two possibilities about Noyem the bar and Noyem the Bar, Tosfot says, Hacha Muchach to Ritzuot Kai, Veloka Moshe Perish Kuntres. So he says, like the second interpretation of Rashi, not like the first interpretation of Rashi, that it's speaking about the Ritzuot, and not speaking about the Kesher Shel Tefillin. Rashi over here, who says that the Kesher Shel Tefillin, the letters on the Tefillin, or Halakha Lamosh Misinai, according to Rashi, is very controversial, and we'll see that in the Tosfot in a little bit. Rashi, you have to come here to Marzutri, Hapaklei Ritzuot, the Tefillin, is Ritzuot flipped over. Don't you hold to the fact that it has to be facing outwards the black? I didn't notice it. I didn't pay attention. I didn't see that it flipped over. Now that you've mentioned it to me, I'll flip it back over. So all the people of the land will see that Hashem's name is called upon you, and they will fear you. Tanya, Rabbi Elazar HaGadol Omer, Elu Tefillin Shel Berosh. That is the Tefillin Shel Rosh. We already discussed this earlier. Why is this tefillin shel rosh? So Rashi says over here, Shem Hashem nikra lecha, shkatuv bo rov Hashem. The majority of the Shem Shakai is on the tefillin shel rosh. You have the shin and the dalet on the tefillin shel rosh, the yod on the tefillin shel yad. So Rashi says the Shem Hashem is literally the letters that you have here that are formed through the shin on the bayit and the dalet that is the ritzuah, the kesher shel tefillin. So that's how Baruch Omer, it's Shem Hashem nikra lecha. Now, ve'asiroti et kapi, ve'rite et achorai. I'm going to take away my hand, and you will see my back. This is when Moshe asked to see Hashem, and Hashem passes in front of him. We're familiar with it now because we're saying it with the Shlosh Esrei Midot during Slicha. We say it by Yavor, Al Bana Vayikra, Amar Rav Chana Bar Bizna, Amar Rav Shimon Chasido, Lamech Heralo Akash Baruch Hu Keshu Shel Tefillin. And Hashem showed him the Keshu Tefillin. He saw the back of his head. Afterwards, what's in the back? The Keshu Shel Tefillin. This matches up with the Agadat and the Gemara and Brachot, that Hashem wears tefillin just like we wear tefillin. water in the parshiot of Hashem's tefillin, mikam kol Yisrael goer chabaretz. So just like our tefillin have yichud Hashem, our allegiance or pledging to Hashem, Hashem's tefillin have his allegiance to us. And so then they look in the Keren Orah and the Mishkanot Yaakov, they were brothers. They speak, again, in the Gemara in Brachot, speak about how the parshiot that are in Hashem's tefillin match up with the parshiot that we have in our tefillin, and that there's this mutual loving relationship between us, and that's what the tefillin represent. And that's what it means, Shelor Kodesh Baruch Hu Bekesher Shel Tefillin, that he saw that Hashem wore tefillin. Now, what does that mean? He showed him the kesher. The kesher of tefillin is the either the placement of the kesher, or he showed him the dalet of the kesher, or he showed him how to make the dalet of the kesher shel tefillin. Heralo, he showed him the kesher tefillin. I'll review the kesher shel tefillin. Tzriach yeh lemalo. It has to be up above. Kedei shel yu lemalo. So a kedei shel should be up above. Below lemato, and not down below. So it's like simanim that we talk about in Rosh Hashanah. Tzriach shel klapei pnim, or klapei panim. Kedei shel Yisrael lefanim velo lachor. First of all, with regards to lemalo, means that when you put on the kesher of tefillin, it should be up high up on the head, on the skull, not on the neck. So when you put on the kesher tefillin in the back, it should not be down at your neck level. It should be up at the level of the skull. Gova sharosh below lamata mitzavar, not down below. That's one piece of it. The other thing is klape, either panim or klape pnim. The Rashi brings two interpretations. According to the first way, klape panim means mul oref, below bitzidei arosh. So that'd be opposite the face. It has to be over here on the back of the head, not on the side of the head, but in the back, opposite the face, mula oref, which means above the back of the neck. So that's where it has to be placed. That's actually the guidance point, is that you have at the bottom of your skull, you have an opening over there. So generally the knot should be a little bit above that opening. Some people have a very big opening. It's too hard to do that, but the knot should be at the top or towards the top of that notch on the skull itself, because then it's the malo and it's opposite the face. Although he brings a second interpretation, klapei pnim, she'akesher mi bifnim, v'anoi shel dalet mi bachutz. It's a repetition of the halacha that we saw before, that the dalet has to be readable, noyem the bar. What Rashi said about noyem the bar was not about the straps, but about the kesher. The kesher, the dalet has to be facing out. That's what it means, klapei pnim, that the knot is towards the inside, and the face of the dalet is towards the outside. So the dalet is readable from the outside. That's the shita of Rashi. Although the Rosh does bring a view from the Gaonim, that klapei pnim is actually a reference to the tefillin shel yad. And the requirement we're going to see later on, to tie the tefillin shel yad while they're tipped towards the lave, towards your heart. And that's what being klapei pnim, that you have to tip them inwards so that they're facing towards your heart. Tosafot takes major issue with Rashi's interpretation. He says here, "Venir the dalet beyud shebetzot lav otiot gemurotein." Says Rashi said, the shin, the dalet, and the yud are the shem Hashem. And that's the Rosh Hashem is on the Rosh. That's what makes them that Vayarumi Mecca, that they'll see Hashem Hashem on you and they'll fear you. It's all because of these letters. Tosman says it's not true. The Dalet and the Yud are not real letters. Belo Chashivi Min Hashem Shel Shakai. They're not part of the name of Shakai. Why is Tosafot so adamant about the fact that that's the case? It's because the straps are Tashmishe Kedusha and do not have inherent Kedusha. The Gemara in Shabbat discusses there's a din, Lachon Moshe Mitzinai, that you have to use for the tefillin, something that you could eat. So only kosher animal hides can be used for tefillin. Over there, the Gemara asks, what do I need that din for? And the Gemara says, oh, for tefillin, the Batim Shel Tefillin. So we don't need that, because there are letters that are imprinted on the Batim of the tefillin. That means, minamutar beficha. Anything you write on has to be on the equivalent of cloth, has to be done at kosher behema. And that's obvious that it has to be mutar beficha. That has to be something that you can eat. And therefore, you don't need a lach l'moshe mitzinai to tell you that you need a kosher hide for the tefillin. So the Gemara says, what do you need it for? The straps. To tell you that the straps have to come from a behema kshera. So then, Tosfot says, according to Rashi, you don't need that. Because the Gemara said it was obvious that the batim come from kosher hides because they have ktivah on them. If you think the dalet and the yud are a ktivah, are real otiot, then the straps themselves you don't need a lach l'moshe mitzinai for, because the straps themselves have writing on them, have real letters, and then for sure it's maybe mutar beficha. You can only do it on something that's mutar to be consumed. So then why do you need a lach l'moshe mitzinai? That's why the Tosfot is adamant about the fact that Rashi is wrong over here, and the dalet and the yud are not real letters, and they don't have this consideration of letters. So now, that does two things. First of all, it eliminates the shame, Hashem, of Shakai. we create that, as you've noted before, when we wrap our hands over here, we create a shin and a dalet on the hand. When we wrap it, and maybe even a yud at the top of the finger. So that may be how we get to the shakai. In addition, Balei Tosfot would say, why is it that the tefillin shel rosh are the thing that the nations will seem to be afraid of us? It's not because of the robe of the Shem Hashem is there, but it's because it's the visible part of the tefillin. The tefillin on the rosh are the things that you would see. The tefillin shel yad is vayol ot al yadcha, it's ot shelcha. First of all, it might be covered by your sleeve. It's something that's closer to the body. It's not something that's obvious right away that you can see it. Tefillin shel rosh, they stick out. As soon as you see the person, they're standing right in front of you. It's tefillin shel rosh. It just says it's a practical thing, that it's at the front and the forefront of the individual. The other possibility is just higher up. Again, we mentioned this yesterday, the tefillin shel rosh are higher than tefillin shel yad, so that's why they have more kedusha to them. But that's why when the amim see it, that's why they're afraid. Not because of the shem Hashem of shakai, it's because the tefillin have the shem Hashem. They're an indication of our allegiance to Hashem. And that's why vayaru mimecha. And that distinction is emphasized by what the Tosfot brings from Yaakov Mi'Orleans, who was misubak, whether you have to take off the tefillin shel yad when you go into the bathroom. Says maybe the tefillin shel rosh you have to take off because that's the shin that is appearing on the outside. But the tefillin shel yad, which are covered in leather and nothing exposed on the outside, maybe you could wear them into the Beit HaKisei, which emphasizes this distinction, but also shows you that the kesher shel yud is not an issue in terms of entering into the Beit HaKisei. Now we come up to the next two halachot, which are really the halacha lemaisa and have huge implications. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Bidri, Amar Rav, Amri la, Amar Rav Acha Rika, Amar Rav Guna, Amri la, Amar Rav Menashe, Amar Rav Shmuel. Tefillin me'ematai mevarech aleim. When do you make the bracha on the tefillin? Mishat anachatan. When you put them on. Ini, Amar Rav Yudah Mashmuel, kol mitzvot kulan mevarech aleim over lasiatian. You have to make the bracha before you do the mitzvah. If you put them on already, then how are you making a bracha once you hanacha? You place them on. By Avraham derei tevrayu mishat anacha v'shat shira. There are two stages in the placement of the tefillin. There's the hanacha and the kshira. The hanacha is when you place it on yourself. The kshira is when you bind it onto yourself. In between the hanacha and the kshira, that's the proper time for the bracha. If you make the bracha before the hanacha, that's too early. That's what's called lifnei de lifnei. It's not over the siyatan, it's over the over. It's too early on, and the bracha is then not connected with the mitzvah. To do it after the kshira is too late, because you've already done the mitzvah. The truth is, with regards to a mitzvah of tefillin and tzitzit, which are mitzvot midot, which is that as long as you're wearing them, you're still making the mitzvah, technically you can make the bracha, even after you are already wearing them and they're already kashur. And same with tzitzit, you can make the bracha because you continue to do the mitzvah after that point in time. It's not a mitzvah like netilat lulav. Once you take it, you're done with the mitzvah. Since it's a continuous mitzvah, you can make the bracha afterwards. And there's a tshuvot from Moshe Feinstein with regards to people who have to put on tefillin before the zman tefillin, whether they can put them on and then make the bracha afterwards because they continue to do the mitzvah. So he discusses it in that context. But the optimal time to do the bracha is before you mekayim the mitzvah, but when you're already engaged in the mitzvah. That's what's being explained over here, that it's between the time of the hanacha and the kshira. Now the Balei Tosfot here bring a major machloket between the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rabbeinu Eliyahu. Rabbeinu Eliyahu says, Mikanayam etavtek Rabbeinu Eliyahu, Tzrich adam lekasher tefillin b'chol yom. You have to tie the knot of your tefillin every day. It says, ukshartem, or ukshartam. You have to tie the knot of the tefillin. And so therefore he said, you have to make the knot of the shel rosh every day, and you have to make the knot of the shel yad every day. Otherwise you're not mekayim the mitzvah of kshira that you need to do. So that would say huge chumrah that the Rabbeinu Eliyahu, and he was adamant about it because the pasuk says, ukshartam. And he says that you only accomplish the mitzvah once you do kshira. That's what the Gemara says over here. That means you have to do some form of kshira. Because what we do is not kshira. Kshira means to tie a knot. And we're not doing that anytime. The Rabbeinu Tam disagrees and says, kshira over here does not mean to tie, because the word kshira is sometimes used to be mehadek, to tighten. And so he says, with regards to the rosh, like when you're pulling the straps down and tightening it around your rosh, that is the equivalent of kshira. Because the word kshira and hiduk, tightening, are used interchangeably. And that's what it means by the kshira over here. Balei Tosafot then bring a compromised position, which is that they think the Rabbeinu Eliyahu is right with regards to tefillin shel yad, and that the Rabbeinu Tam is right by the tefillin shel rosh. Because the Rabbeinu Eliyahu by tefillin shel yad, because there it says ukshartam. There the mitzvah is to do kshira. So therefore you have to tie the knot every day. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam makes more sense by the rosh, Because there's no din of kshira by the Rosh. Their replacement of the Rosh on should be sufficient. So he says, that's what the Baal Tosfos comes basically to a conclusion, that must be the right way to do it. But then he backs away from that. He comes to the conclusion that the Rebbeinu Tam is right through and through. And that he has two major proofs to that fact. One major proof is the Lashon of our Gemara. Our Gemara says over here that it's Mishat Anacha Va'ad Shat Kshira. From the time that you put it on to the time that you tie it. For the Rebbeinu Eliyahu, it should have been just the opposite. Because you have to do the Kshira first and then to do Anacha. You can't do the Anacha without a Kshira. You'd have to knot it first and then put the Anacha on. So it says the language of the Gemara is backwards. But then the Tosfot whispers and says, we found some Kitvei Yad that have it just the opposite. There's our Kitvei Yad that support the Rebbeinu Eliyahu. So that's one proof they have in favor of the Rebbeinu Tam. The second proof they have in favor of the Rebbeinu Tam is the Gemara in Shabbat. The Gemara in Shabbat lists different types of knots. And certain knots are a Keshul Shel Kayama, and certain knots are not a Keshul Shel Kayama. Keshul Shel Kayama is a knot that is permanent. It stays there for a long duration. A knot that is opened every day is not considered to be a Keshul Shel Kayama. One of the knots that is noted to be a Keshul Shel Kayama is the Kesher of Tefillin. So he says, and shows him that, if you were undoing the knot every day and redoing it every day like the Rebbeinu Eliyahu, it wouldn't be a Kesher Shel Kayama. So he says, that's true with regards to the Tefillin Shel Rosh. Because that we have that it's considered a Kesher Shel Kayama. What about the Tefillin Shel Yad? How do we find there that it's considered to be a Kesher Shel Kayama? So then he brings a din from Mikvaot that shows also the Kesher of the Tefillin there. Even though when it slides up and down, that knot also is considered to be a knot that's permanent. Because if a knot is permanent, when you put it in the mikveh, you don't have to undo the knot. If a knot is not permanent, then you would have to undo it and let the water get in there. So he shows from there also that the Tefillin Shel Yad, the knot there, is also a permanent knot. And in that way, supportive of the view of the Rebbeinu Tam, that the knots can remain permanently in the Tefillin Shel Rosh and Tefillin Shel Yad. And when we put them on, that's what's considered to be kshira. Despite all of that, it's very difficult. Meaning that by the Shel Rosh, there's a lot of latitude, because the word kshira does not appear by the Shel Rosh. In addition, you can argue that mehadke, when you tie it on, that's considered to be kshira, because it locks it onto your head. By the Tefillin Shel Yad, it's very difficult what we do, and why that's considered to be kshira. You pull it, and you wrap it around a couple of times, and we call that a kshira. Why is that a kshira? How do you create a kshira by doing such a thing? So, the Mishkano Yaakov brings down that he thinks that when you put on your Tefillin Shel Yad, that you should not stop like we do and wrap it around your hand, but you should finish it off, wrap your fingers, and knot it at the bottom. Because otherwise you don't have a kshira. Kshira means something that will not become unwound. Something that will remain in that state. And the only way to reach kshira is to actually tie it to the point where it will not unravel. And that means you actually have to go to the final stages of doing the Tefillin Shel Yad. And therefore he argues that you have to do a kshira fully. That you should not stop in the Shel Yad. You should go all the way to the end. The Mishkano Yaakov actually mentions two issues. One is that the mitzvah may not be complete until you do the krichot on the finger, and that's why you need to do it, because otherwise you haven't done the mitzvah of kshira. But in addition to that, he worries about the fact that you haven't done kshira until you've wrapped around the krichot of the finger. We tie it to the point where it will not unravel. And so the combination of those items makes him favor finishing off the wrapping of the tefillin all the way down to the finger before you put on the tefillin sherosh. That's brought by the Mishnah Berurah, who quotes the Mishkanot Yaakov, and cited Nefesh HaRav, that was the practice of Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, and he also quotes it, B'shem the Mishkanot Yaakov, that it's idea of finishing off the full krichot before you put on the Tefillin Shel Rosh. The Rosh speaks about wrapping it around the arm a bunch of times to lock it in place, to make it into a real shira. There are some Sephardim that actually wrap their swab back over the bayit, even though that's not condoned by the postgame. But nevertheless, they wrap back over the bayit to pull it down and to be kosherit onto the yad. Because that creates a kshira, and that way you're doing something. The way we have it today, there's no real kshira that you're doing. Because all we do is we're just tightening that a loop that was there. You tighten the loop can come undone. There's nothing locking the loop in place. So the wrapping, if you wrap it many times, then maybe you can lock it in place. But that's why he says you have to get to the bottom and tie it at the bottom of your hand. The benefit is that then you have a full-fledged kshira at that point in time. The mitigating factor, the reason we don't do it, is both because of the fact that it says, so there's some indication that the tzotafot ben enecha happened while you're doing the kshira of the yad. Because of the vav achibor, while you're doing the kshira of the yad, there'll be tzotafot ben enecha. So that's why we leave some of the shel yad for the kshira to be finished up, after we put on the tefillin shel rosh. And it's because the bracha, at least for the Shulchan Aruch, which we're going to see in tomorrow's daf, probably the bracha, one bracha covers both the shel yad and shel rosh. So we don't want to finish the shel yad because we want the bracha to be connected to the shel rosh while we're putting on the shel yad still. As we don't have any hefsek between the shel yad and the shel rosh, because the bracha, again, is being chal on both. And for that reason, we don't want to do what we call the unnecessary krichot before we put on the tefillin shel rosh. So that's the reason that we do it that way. So that's the downside of going through the kshira all the way to the end before putting on the tefillin shel rosh. Although the Mishnah Berurah does bring in the name of the Arizal, and Mishnah Yoakov quotes the Ari as well, that his practice was to finish off the krichot all the way down to the bottom before he put on the tefillin shel rosh. But everyone agrees that you have to do the krichot, or at least a number of the krichot, before you put on the tefillin shel rosh, because otherwise you haven't done kshira with the tefillin shel yad. So then for tefillin shel yad, the hanacha is putting it onto the bicep, and then the kshira is when you tighten it around the bicep, and then we discuss more kshira, whether you have to knot it or you have to wrap it around a bunch of times to lock it in place. On the rosh, once you tighten it down on your rosh, you're already done. So you need to make the bracha when you first get the tefillin on your head, and you need to make the bracha then, and before you start to tighten it down, because that's already the kshira for the tefillin shel rosh. So while you're in the process of putting it on, that's when you should make the bracha, and just make sure your yarmulke is still on your head when you're doing that. Then you finish tightening it and pull the straps forward, and then you say the baruch shem kavod, which is tomorrow's daf, but that's the kshira. The kshira is the hiduk. So you need to make the bracha before you do the hiduk. Some people make the bracha after that, and then they pull the straps forward. That's too late. The hiduk is when the mitzvah is, and you need to do it before you actually mahadek and tighten it around the head. All right, we're going to stop here, and then the Gemara tomorrow is going to continue with the major machlok between the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim as to which brachot and how many brachot you make on the tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel rosh.